You're listening to the return of AJ Mast on Rob as a podcast to talk about the 13 archetypes of Big Brother. But first, for all you sports fans out there, big episode of the Big Podcast with Shaq when Charles Barkley joins the show this week. Here's a promo and then AJ Mast.
Back together again, it's the Diesel and his buddy Charles Barkley this week on the Big Podcast with Shaq.
Chuck, every day out in the public, people ask me, was the fall stage? Could you let America know that that was not stage?
First of all, when somebody falls like that, your first reaction is to make sure they're all right. Then you have to start laughing. Nobody's going to fall that hard for fake. I mean, that was, like, TNT ain't paying you and me enough to fall that hard for fun.
The Big Podcast with Shaq.
That's me. It's up right now at podcastone.com.
That's podcastone.com.
Hey everybody, what's going on? Rob Cesternino here, back to talk about some Big Brother 17. I'm very excited for this. We do this every season of Big Brother and Survivor. Here with us once again is our great friend of the podcast. You know him from ESPN. Here is the one and only AJ Mast.
Hey Rob, what's going on?
How you doing, AJ?
I'm doing good.
Yes. AJ, I hope you will be very excited to know that I have taught my son how to say Mr. Met.
Oh, that's so cute and tragic at the same time.
Yes.
Oh, it's delightful to hear that. I'm honored. I think I'm speechless a little bit here. That's great. Yeah, Mr. Met's a big part of me.
Yes. I wish there was more Mr. Met YouTube videos. If you have any of your Mr. Met stuff, it would be great if you could upload it to YouTube.
I'll try at some point. I did at one point, and then I think I lost the actual digital file. I would have to get my my VHS to digital dubbing down in order to do that.
Yeah.
So I think there's only like one video of me at like a wedding for like it's like an Indian wedding, and it's not even me, but it was like years after. But I think it's like it comes up like Mr. Met at Pooja's wedding or something.
All right, well, look at that. It's hard to go down the Mr. Met YouTube rabbit hole without ultimately ending up with Mr. Met walking in with Mrs. Met in bed with the Philly fanatic, and that's unfortunate and hard to explain to a baby.
Yeah, there's a lot of things on Big Brother.
Trying to hang himself. Yeah, it's not good. All right.
Don't shut down Big Brother then on the live feeds.
So we are ready to talk about Big Brother 17. And what we're going to do here today, two things on the docket for today. First things first, we are going to be talking about AJ's 13 archetypes, talking about from AJ's first book. Right? Was that your first book? Is there a previous book before How Fantasy Sports Explains the World?
No, that was the big debut. You were correct.
We're going to talk about the archetypes that AJ outlines for creating the perfect fantasy league. He has 13 archetypes. Really, it's 12 and one is two parts. So 13 altogether, 13 people left in the Big Brother house. So we're going to talk about all of that here today. And then AJ and I are going to do our big brother draft for the season.
Woohoo!
Yes.
Yes, looking forward. I think I owe you some payback for a couple of seasons in a row of brutal defeats.
Yes. They were brutal, maybe in that they came down to the wire.
Yeah, well, heartbreaking.
Heartbreakers, right.
Yes.
Not so much blowouts.
No.
Yeah. Not like in, was it San Juan del Sur?
I thought you didn't want to talk about that anymore.
Maybe it was Kagyan. Maybe it was Kagyan.
It was Kagyan. I think I had five of the last six. Yeah.
Total wipeout. It was a flameout. Okay.
Yes.
It happens. All right. So, AJ, why don't you take us through a little bit of how you came up with these 13 archetypes?
Yeah, well, I was I'm a fantasy sports writer in my day job here for ESPN. I write about baseball and cover fantasy sports. And one of the things I noticed in coming up with fantasy sports leagues is that if everybody has the same personality in your league, then things aren't going to get done. People aren't going to trade with other people because everyone values the players the exact same way. And you get into that groupthink kind of thing, and a league's fall apart. What you need are different types of personalities in order to sustain a league. And, thinking on it further, I realized that that could be expanded out to, a group of friends. A group of friends, if they all think alike, they don't last through the years. But, you can take a group of college buddies and like, they all seem to have the same people in them, you know, different actual physical people, but the archetypes seem to remain the same. And it applies to the boardroom, to a jury, and it also can apply to reality television. You know, these shows are cast, and they're casting archetypes. I know Angie Counts does a very good podcast with you where she discussed the casting archetypes. These are more of the archetypes that people fall into once they're in the house or on the island and start interacting with each other. They're kind of like the nouns, whereas the casting types are the adjectives. These are kind of the nouns, the jobs, that the roles that people fill inside the Big Brother house.
Okay, so AJ, talk us through the order in which we're going to be hearing about these today.
Okay, what we're going to do is I'm going to take you from number 13 down through number 1. Now, there's 12 archetypes, but one of them is a two-part archetype, so that's why there's 13. And it maps out to the current house. We're going to start with number 13, which is the one with the least chance of winning as the archetype. This archetype has a really bad chance of really the worst chance of winning is number 13. That doesn't mean that they cannot win. Because if someone is cast in an archetype that has a poor chance of winning, it just means the road is harder. You can have upset victories in sports all the time, and there can be an upset winner in Big Brother. It has nothing to do with the person in question. It's just the role that they are filling. You know, you can be the favorite to win in the role and just be really bad at the role. And end up not winning or making a horrible mistake later on. So it really is not reflective of the person per se. It's a reflection of the archetype. It just, you know, the odds are stacked against the person who comes in 13th in this list. Doesn't mean they can't win. Just odds are, they have to like play a perfect game in order to do so.
Okay. All right. So you're ready to get into this?
Yeah, let's do it. Let's do it.
Let's start off with...
Wait, are we doing this or is there going to be a takeover before we start?
Get ready for a takeover!
AJ, in honor of 90s week, who's your favorite 90s musical act?
Wow, that's a tough one. The 90s, you know, that I obviously Nirvana is an easy answer because they you know, changed the course of music and getting away from the boy band world that had existed at the start there. So I have to say Nirvana from a realistic standpoint. I don't think their memory was necessarily served.
I thought that they really created a very fitting and beautiful tribute to Kurt Cobain there. I think he would have really liked that Battle of the Block this week.
Sure, because what better way to honor Kurt Cobain's memory than to have a competition where, you know...
I think he really would have liked Big Brother, especially Battle of the Block.
Sure. Why didn't they have him reach into a heart-shaped box and pull something out?
I think he would have been into it.
Yeah. You know, I before we get started on this, this whole takeover idea... I hated it from the get-go. There's nothing wrong with the game of Big Brother. Big Brother does not need fixing. Big Brother, the game engine is perfect. And I know CBS is going to tweak it here and there, and I'm fine with that. But, I mean, the fact that they've given up after really 2 weeks, I mean, Gronk phoned it in.
No, Kathy Griffin phoned it in.
Well, she phoned it in, but at least she showed up to the live show. I mean,
no, that was the twist that she had to give the seventh caller. They got the power.
Yes. But you know what? They didn't even have one this week. It's 90s week. That's not a takeover. It's just a theme. Oh, it's driving me nuts. But all right. Never mind. I'm sure next week they'll get, you know, Donald Trump will come in and turn it into The Apprentice or something. Don't run in for president, but.
Wow, that would be very exciting if they could get Donald Trump. It seems like he would go anywhere right now.
That would be quite the takeover.
He'd show up and talk about, you know, the person who got voted out. They were a loser. I don't like losers. I'm sorry, Audrey.
Yeah, indeed. Okay. Indeed. All right, let's kick off these archetypes here because I could criticize CBS all day.
Let's go to number 13 on the list. Who do you got? Who is the worst?
Okay, number the archetype at number 13 that is the least chance of winning is called Fresh Meat. And Fresh Meat is basically someone who has no idea what they're doing. They may not understand the rules of the game. In many cases, they don't even understand that they're actually on TV playing a game. They're just, you know, the most clueless in terms of Big Brother. The person you're just like, why did they bother casting this person? They just don't have a clue.
As always, we have a couple of options.
We do have a couple of options here. and that's one thing as we're starting.
Yes.
Many, you can fit these pieces into the puzzle in many different ways. This is my opinion. Feel free to disagree. I'm not wrong because it's my opinion. But I mean, you know, this is to discuss. It's another way of watching the show. It's another way of tweaking it. Plus, I don't watch the live feeds. I mean, I know that you could watch the live feeds and really you're watching a completely different program. I mean, you know, I'm watching just the TV show. I don't know what's going on in the live feeds, you know, unless something like the TMZ thing comes out and you know, becomes a really public thing. So, you know, to me, these people are only what I'm seeing on the live feeds. That's the game that I'm watching.
Seeing on the TV show.
On the TV show, rather, yeah. If you're watching live feeds, you're watching a completely different show. Like, you know, I know William Shatner once said on a Saturday Night Live skit that, you know, in Japan, they have this great show. It's called Sulu, Master of Navigations. And that's the kind of thing. And if you watch it from that angle, you're watching a different show. You know, yeah. If you emphasize those characters, that's what you're seeing. I'm not seeing that.
Oh, my.
Yeah. So to that point, my opinion on Fresh Meat, detour, pawn, or yawn. In Pawn, Jackie goes up on the block each week and doesn't seem to understand why. Now, in Yawn, who cares?
AJ, I know that your son is a big Amazing Race fan. Were you guys fans of Jeff and Jackie on the Amazing Race?
No! No, they were boring. Where's Blaley? That would have been exciting. They just were milk toast. I mean, you know, Jeff is so boring that even in the opening credits, the picture of him makes me yawn. It's so boring. He's just, here I am standing here in shorts. Look at me. I hated both of them. I'm glad he's gone. I hope Jackie is not too far behind him. She's boring. The only thing I can say about Jackie, the only time I even notice her really in the house, for some reason when she's in the confessional, in the diary room, the lights from the cameras are like really bounce off her eyeballs.
Oh, I'll have to look for that.
It drives me nuts. It's like this is this black orb with this white glow. It's like, ah. Other than that, I honestly haven't noticed her at all in the house.
All right, well, we'll look out for Jackie's eyeballs. All right, number 13 here is Fresh Meat, and it's Jackie. Do you remember who you said in Big Brother 16 was the Fresh Meat?
Yes, I do have the 16 with me. That's the only one I have on call here, and that was Jocasta.
Okay, I think that's probably about right.
Mama J didn't really know how to play.
Okay.
Yeah, so all right. And then, you know, really not much more to say about that. I don't think Jackie knows what she's doing. I think she's still looking for the pit stop for week one and still hasn't found it. Number 12 on our list would be the Ninja.
Ninja. What is the Ninja?
And not to be confused, Big Brother Canada fans, with the Ginger.
No, not the Ginger Ninja 604.
No, not that kind of Ninja. But the Ninja is basically someone who, if I asked you right now to list all the people left in the house, you'd probably forget the last name. This would be the last name you'd come up with. You might even not even remember it after writing them all down and watching a couple of episodes because they're never on camera. They don't have any diary room sessions that are interesting. You can go like 3-4 episodes and then, oh yeah, they're still around?
Yeah.
Wow. So you have any guesses for the Ninja?
I got hit by a train last year while I was walking.
Indeed. Yes, the Ninja was so invisible the conductor on the train didn't see her.
Oh, come on. It's too soon, AJ.
Is it too soon? Yeah, Becky. I mean, really, I don't remember the last time I saw Becky.
No, and she's really, like, even like on the live feeds, she's said like, they haven't called me in to go to the diary room in like 5 days.
It's insane how invisible. She's won an HOH. And I still, my wife watched the episode with me last night. She just watched everyone, but she watches them occasionally with me. And she was like, who's that? I was like, well, that confirms.
Yeah. Beckers.
Now, it doesn't mean that, a ninja can float their way to the end, because at some point it becomes where they have done nothing and therefore have no argument, you know, to win, and, you know, becomes a voting number. Certainly they can last all the way to the end. In fact, last season was Victoria, was the ninja, because she didn't say anything for the first 6 weeks of the season. You know, it wasn't until Derek said, "Hey, come with me," you know. So
yeah,
there's hope for making it a long run, but I mean, it's certainly not going to be an interesting one.
Yeah. And there is hope if you're a Becky fan that some really good player could see her and say, "Boy, I bet it'd be good to go to the end with Becky."
Yeah, is Becky really going to come up with some argument at the end saying, "Well, these are all the things I did"? I mean, no. If she was doing anything, we'd have seen her by now.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Well, I think that was a good call on the ninja.
Yeah. Number 11 is the cheerleader.
Cheerleader. Okay. What is the cheerleader in the Big Brother house?
A cheerleader, you know, sometimes in terms of Big Brother, it can be the house mom. A lot of times there's a very motherly character. It doesn't have to be a female. It could be, you know, a very fatherly character if there was like a caretaker type. Or conversely, someone who just everybody seems to like. You know, like, oh, you know, they're supportive of everybody. They don't make waves. It's just, if you can finish the sentence, "Everybody likes blank," with this person, and you hear it so many times in the house, that's the cheerleader. That's the someone that's just rosy, happy Miss Sunshine.
Mm-hmm. I think.
Yes.
It's got to be Meg, right?
Ding!
Wow. AJ, I think you're, so far, I think you're 3 for 3 on these today. I think coming out hot today.
I knew these three were easy. I mean, I've actually heard them say everybody loves Meg. That's why she keeps going on the block at the beginning. You know, last few weeks she was going on the block, battle of the block. Because like, well, everyone loves Meg. She's the perfect pawn. No one's going to vote her out. You know, it's very easy to be like that. And she hasn't really plotted or schemed. I think she's embraced the role and is willing to like see where it takes her.
Okay. All right. So Meg is the cheerleader. Everybody likes her. Last season, you said the cheerleader was the one and only Frankie Grande.
Indeed.
Yeah, I could see
Indeed.
That.
And, you know, he was very supportive of everybody. I mean, yes, he was a little bit more of someone who was manipulating and playing the game. I think this goes to show that they're filling a role, but there are many different ways to fill a role. And So, again, Frankie, I think, had a better chance of fitting other categories. But there was no one else in the house last season who really was honestly, I think, at his core, Frankie was rooting for everyone to have a good time and to really be, you know, involved and like, go. And you know, a lot of times the cheerleader will actually be the host of a lot of competitions because they're fun and they're rooting and everything. A lot of positive, happy diary room sessions.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, Meg's not necessarily the character that Frankie was by any stretch of the imagination, but, you know, she
likes to wear... But who is, AJ?
Yeah, but she likes to wear a pair of goofy glasses into the diary room every now and then.
All right. Number 10 on the list.
Number 10 on the list is the narcissist. And the narcissist is usually, a narcissist, they like themselves. They're someone who will primp in the mirror, perhaps, but... Someone who looks good, doesn't necessarily wear a lot of clothing, will wear the skimpy outfits, will use their body to kind of flirt. If it's a guy, you would probably call this person a meat shield.
Mm.
You know, it's a person, they're good in competitions, but they're really, it's not so much about what's upstairs between the ears. It's kind of the whole visual package.
I got two different directions that I could go for this.
And let me tell you, there are two different directions, and... There's four people here that could have easily gone A, B, C, D, or, you know, D, C, B, A, and yeah.
For me right now, I'm torn between Austin and Liz / Julia. Technically, there's 14 people in the mix.
There are, yeah, exactly.
Right. Are we counting Liz as one person?
Yeah, for now it's Lizulia or what is it?
Yeah.
Yeah, for now they're a hybrid, yes, absolutely. I considered going with Austin here. I really did because he's obviously physically fit and certainly not the brightest person in the house. I mean, I think he thinks he's smarter than he is. But I'm actually going with, to me, what is more of a pure definition of the narcissist, and I'm going with the full on meat shield that is Clay.
Clay. Okay.
Yeah. And I just think Clay is kind of the, you know, if he was not involved in any kind of a showman's kind of thing, I don't think there'd be any doubt this is where he would fit. And that's why I'm putting him here. I think the only thing that might have taken him out of it is the association with Shelley. But I mean, you know, I look at him, you know, I just say, you know, here's this, you know, Andy Roddick looking guy who's just, he can win any competition he wants, really, yeah, in this house. He's far and away, if he chooses to win a competition and not throw it, it's his. And I think that's a narcissist to me is someone who is someone who's easy on the eyes, who physically fit and doesn't necessarily plot and scheme. And I don't think he's plotting and scheming, certainly in the way that would fit any of the other categories that are going to come. Yeah, he's deciding on things. And he's kind of steering Shelley in certain directions, but it's not coming from this master strategist kind of thing. I think he's still kind of reacting on instinct more than intent.
Okay, we'll see. I got to look at the rest of the board there to see if there's a better place where I'd put Clay. I feel like that's a first one that we're on different pages.
And I'm
on.
Fine with it. They're, like I said, these pieces can go together to paint the different picture. It's not etched in stone. The first three pretty much were solid, and here we start to get into a little wiggle room area.
Yeah, are you keen on the Shelley and Clay showmance?
I'm not really.
No, I wouldn't even say it's a show. I mean, they're technically not a couple.
Yeah, well, you know, I would put them in the showmance category. I mean, it's not Miranda by any stretch of the
showmance
imagination.
Showmance adjacent.
Yes, yes,
not
exactly.
With Jason.
Yeah, I mean, you know, to me, you know, like I said, I see him, I see Andy Roddick, I see her, I see Chelsea Handler, and you know, it's a weird connection. Mm-hmm. So it makes me a little uncomfortable because I don't get it, but you know, I'm not in the house.
Yeah. AJ, when I talked to Matthew Berry a couple of weeks ago, your former college classmate,
yes,
and colleague, that he was very taken with Shelley and Clay.
Yeah,
he loved them, and he said he wants them to have kids, and he wants to adopt one of them.
Hey, different strokes for different folks. Not my thing. I mean, I think Matthew, I mean, he's a dear friend, but you know, as he grew up in the Texas A&M environment, I think
he's a homer.
I think the gig'em love might be putting a little color on his glasses there, if you know what I mean.
All right, let's go to our next one. This is going to be number 9.
Number 9, Old Reliable.
We love Old Reliable.
Yeah, Old Reliable. Now, you know, in Survivor, Old Reliable is almost, you know, they cast because it's a casting type more so than a personality type. But, I mean, Old Reliable is usually someone who is, you know, what you see is what you get. They're really solid in competitions, but they're not a competition beast. They have a grasp of the strategy of the game, but they don't really do anything to make waves. They don't get a lot of blood on their hands, but they're willing to do so if it's needed. They're, you know, they're good old boys. They're okay, middle of the pack, nothing special. That's why they're number 9.
Yeah. It sounds like to me you're describing James.
I am indeed.
Yes, there you go.
I am the not so beast mode cowboy.
By the way, I will say that our Old Reliable in Survivor this past season won.
Yeah, how about
Mike,
that?
Mike Holloway was Old Reliable.
How about that? I mean, and he, you know, he did it in the way that Old Reliable, I think, has to win is just go on a comp run towards the end there. I mean that kind of is the thing. I mean, they don't have strong alliances because they're, you know, they're a threat, but they're just not the number one threat. They're expendable at some point, but you keep them around because there's usually someone who's tough. I mean, you look at, there was a moment in the show last night where, you know, James was standing next to Austin giving him a hug and he looked like half an Austin, you know. It's just like, oh, well, as long as Austin's in the house, James got nothing to worry about, you would think, from a threat standpoint. Obviously, personalities get in, and we know that that plays a factor into it. But he's not the first person when you walk in. Even after he won the first HOH, no one was going to go like, wow, I think James is going to run the table here. We got to get him out. It was just, he was able to slip back into the background for a bit because he's not a threat.
Yeah. So James is Old Reliable. Our Old Reliable last season, Hayden Voss.
Yeah, and again, he was someone who was not the biggest competition threat last season. There were certainly people who were physically bigger than him, and you know, certainly Beast Mode Cowboy was someone who was that way. You know, you could have flipped last season. Also, you could have flipped Hayden as the narcissist versus Caleb, but Caleb was, you know, last season definitely spent like a lot of time staring at himself in the mirror, telling us how amazing he was. So that's what certainly solidified his role as a narcissist there. But yeah, I mean, Hayden was never going to be someone you're like, oh my God, I have to get him out of the house now. The target was never on his back at some point. Yeah. And that was really after he started becoming, you know, Hayden and Nicole. It was a different type of threat that you know, eliminated him eventually.
Okay. All right. So that's James. That's Old Reliable. He should hope to have a Holloway-esque run here the rest of the way.
Indeed.
Let's go to number 8, AJ.
All right. Number 8 is the idiot savant.
Idiot savant.
It doesn't mean they're stupid by any means, but it's someone who makes decisions that really don't seem to make a whole lot of sense to us, the viewer. But they seem to be working. You know, an idiot savant is someone who probably, by all rights, should have been out of the house by now, but by making certain decisions, usually influenced heavily by other people in the house, decide to, all right, I'll just do what you want, or, you know, they'll change their mind at the last minute, and you know, you'll be like, what did they do that for? And somehow it ends up working for them, and they end up with a lot of power as a result, when at the beginning of the season, you probably didn't think this person was going to be a power broker. It's a tough one.
I feel like, based on your description, I feel like you're saying it's Liz.
It is not Liz. Oh. Although, no, it is not Liz, and I think you'll find out why later.
Steve?
No, it's not Steve. And I'm just gonna say, I already know this is where people are gonna say you're absolutely wrong, you're crazy.
Okay. What is it?
It is Shelley.
Shelley.
It is Shelley. And I think from the beginning, watching this game, Shelley has really made the wrong call a lot of times. I just think she's letting other people tell her what to do. And again, I don't watch the live feeds. It could be possible that in the live feeds you watch her talk for an hour, and she's clearly pulling the strings. Watching the TV show, it seems like she'll do whatever Clay tells her to do.
Yeah.
So, I mean, to me, she's not controlling things at all. She always seems to be like, well, you know, I think we'll do this, but I don't really want to do this. Oh, I don't know. You know, you do it. You know, even from the beginning with the alliance that she had at the very beginning with Vanessa and Day. And then, you know, she was like, why didn't she pick me? Oh, I'm going to be upset about this. You know, it really colored in my mind that she wasn't necessarily playing the game right. Mm-hmm. And I was sure she was going to be out a long time ago. But, you know, obviously you hook up with Clay, you suddenly become a powerful duo, and you start listening to him and to the other people in the house, to Austin and Vanessa, and suddenly it's like, yeah, she's in power, but I don't feel like she's calling the shots. I don't feel like she's like untouchable. She's not like, you know, Amanda was, where you knew Amanda was calling the shots. It just seems like she's making decisions that are working, but at the same time, like, you know, are they? For the long term? You know, I don't know. I mean, she probably should have kicked Audrey out of the house like 3 times by now. And yeah. Every week she comes back to the same spot. Well, I really probably should get rid of Audrey. Mm-hmm. Oh, but I trust her. But I don't trust her. It's a weird wishy-washy place to be.
She gives her the benefit of the doubt.
Yeah, and I think I don't think that's a smart decision. Again, I think that fits. That's where this fits in. I don't think she's making smart decisions. I think she's making emotional decisions, and that's not going to get you higher on this list.
Now, I'm interested to see where you go with the marriage of convenience, because I feel like Clay and Shelley might have fit nicely in there.
Absolutely. 100%. I was torn. There were two really strong ones that possibilities for, like, this was the two, between the narcissist and the idiot savant and the marriage. Like, there was a lot of different ways I could have gone with these. And this is the one that I just feel works a little bit better.
Yeah. All right. So, hold on. Last season, idiot savant was Nicole.
It was Nicole. Again, I don't know. Oh, no. Tell me what to do, please. Yeah, she had the perfect voice for it too.
Yeah,
but I mean, she was smart.
She was smart, but then she didn't know, like, smart. Common sense things.
Yeah, it just didn't work. So There was that. Now, the next one on our list, the next one is, and again, the order of the archetypes is a little different for Big Brother than it is for Survivor because of the mechanisms of the game and whatnot. So the next one is The Marriage of Convenience Part 2.
Okay.
Or the more submissive or the beta of the two. So we're not going to reveal that now because by doing so, you kind of figure out the other one and we'll save it for later.
Got it.
So we're skipping number 7. Move on to number 6, which is usually the source of much of the entertainment in the house. It is the loose cannon.
Loose cannon.
Love the loose cannon. Even if I hate the loose cannon, I always love the loose cannon because it's usually just fun to watch the mayhem that they cause. You just never know the unpredictable nature of the loose cannon. They can... You know, in past seasons, Devin would have been a perfect loose cannon if he had lasted.
He didn't make it,
but he was a loose cannon, poster child had he lasted because he's the type of person who just like, oh, I'm just going to bring 77,000 people into my alliance. Like, that's crazy talk. Last season, it was someone who, I can't wait to hear the podcast that you do with him soon, Mr. Rancy Pants.
Yeah, Zach Rance.
Zach Rance. And you know, of course, you know, someone who's going to just suddenly explode, throw Fruit Loops all over the place. I mean,
right.
Fantastic, fantastic television. And this season, we have someone who has just fallen right into that mold. Someone who you just never know at what hour of the night suddenly we'll call for a house meeting. Mm-hmm. Bringing people into the room one by one by one until suddenly you have a brand new alliance of 27 people. I'm surprised she didn't bring in people off the street to join the alliance.
Buckle up, bitches.
Yes.
Oh, Audrey.
Audrey, yeah, the great loose cannon.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. It's great television. Just to watch the lying and the duplicity for no reason whatsoever.
Mm-hmm.
It's glorious to watch. I don't think loose cannons, generally speaking, have a chance in hell of winning the game. You know, unless there's a lot of things that go fall into place. I mean, Evil Dick did win the game and was absolutely a loose cannon, and that's not going to happen too often. That was just a rare, beautiful season that really the only reason Evil Dick won is because of America's Player.
He's not going to like that.
You know, that whole Eric Stein being forced to do what he was not in his best interest is the reason Evil Dick won. And I'm sorry to say, sad for Eric, but happy for Evil Dick. And a loose cannon cannot win. It cannot win because at the end of the day, not going to get enough votes at the end if they've just turned off so many people. And I think people just don't trust Audrey.
Yeah, for Audrey, she really just could have come to the house. She had so much goodwill in the beginning of the game after the first couple of days. She really could have gotten the house, got in bed, put the covers over her head, and woke up, and it would have been jury. She would have never gotten voted out of the house if she didn't say anything to anybody.
Yeah, although I will say, I don't get into politics or make big statements or anything, but I have to say, it's good to see Audrey being treated the way she's treated because she's being treated like anyone else would be treated in this situation doing what she did.
Yeah,
they really aren't treating her with kid gloves for the nonsense. They're calling her on the nonsense. And yeah, she's survived a bit longer than I thought. But at this point, if she gets voted out, it's because of what she did. I was really I was scared going in that perhaps week one, you know, she would make her big announcement or, you know, whenever she revealed that she was transgender. I thought that might be a factor in some people. And it's great to see that was great. You know, one
night
it was
not even a blip on the radar. So that's how crazy her game has been that nobody even cares.
And to me, that's fantastic. I mean, you want to talk about the sign of, you know, a sign of equality when it's not even a factor at all.
Yeah,
that's wonderful because she deserves to be like isolated and like, no, I don't trust you because I don't trust you. You've earned my lack of trust.
Mm-hmm.
And that's great to see. So I think, you know, some people might say, oh, you see what, you know, well, someone's playing like Audrey. Like, no, Audrey's just insane in terms of the game. And it has nothing to do with anything except that's who Audrey is. And the fact that she's being treated that way, I just think is great.
Okay. All right. From the loose cannon, we go to number 5.
Number five is The Diplomat. And The Diplomat. Now, in Survivor, The Diplomat is number one on the list because, you know, you've got two tribes and they're always separate and the gameplay is different. Here, you know, even though you have maybe two different sides of the house, you're together the whole time. But The Diplomat is someone who can kind of reach across the aisle and, like, talk to both sides of the house. You know, usually you got to, you know, it's us and there's them and, you know, we don't talk to them. No, don't talk to them. The Diplomat can talk to both sides. They're kind of like someone who everyone likes in the house. They're usually a nice person. They're usually a person with no real enemies, but yet somehow always ends up being placed on the block as a pawn because they're just, you know, oh, you're not going home. Don't worry about it. But, you know, everyone seems to like this person. They can talk to anyone in the house and strategize. It's just a question of what level of strategy are they going to get to? Are they a good enough player where they can take advantage of the fact that they are so popular with everybody and use it to their advantage? But they're not someone who's going to get voted out early because everyone does like them.
It sounds to me like you're describing Johnny Mac.
I am indeed describing Bobcat Goldthwait himself.
This is going to be like the worst dental injection of all time. Just boom, right in the gums and bam!
I just want to go to the police academy. Oh my goodness! All I hear is Bobcat. Yeah, Johnny Mac. I mean, he's such a fun guy to watch on the show. It's great to see how actually aware of his situation. But yeah, he's so awkward that he really can't even do anything about it. And that, you know, this is even more endearing as a viewer of the show. But yeah, he can hang out in a room with Meg and, you know, with Jason and Steve, and no problem. You can hang out in a room with Clay and Shelley and go to the HOH room. And, you know, he can do these things. I mean, that's what I'm seeing on TV. Mm-hmm. That he's working with both sides, kind of. I mean, he's not like in the inner circle of either one, but, you know, he's able to, it's not floating. It's he's able to transition between any combination of people in the house and still find some inroads. And I think in a social game, that's a great skill to have, and few people enter the house with that kind of skill set.
I think he's positioned well. However, this, hey, buddy, can you go up on the block for us again? It's sort of like an Office Space thing where it's like they keep kind of like, Johnny Mac, we're going to need you to work on Saturday. If you could do that, that'd be great.
No!
Yeah, he told us no, and that's great. He told them yes, and that's the problem. I think there's Diplomat, and it's a fine line between being the Diplomat and being the Doormat.
Yeah, Johnny Mac, we're going to need you to move your desk into the have-not room. So if you could just go and take care of that, that'd be great, okay?
But I want my red stapler.
No!
Yeah. I think he's fantastic. Television. He's fun. I'm rooting for him wholeheartedly. Every competition, I just find myself rooting for him. I thought it was hilarious that he was like, oh yeah, I'll throw it. And like, oh, I just have to stand here and watch James get lost in the suds. I don't have to throw anything. I'm like, see you guys, threw it. It had nothing to do with it at all. But yeah, he's in a dangerous position because he is not standing up for himself. If there was a way that he could be a little bit more forceful, you know, you can be a diplomat and not be a pushover. And I don't think he's figured out how to do that just yet. If he does at any point push back and survives that kind of pushback, then, you know, he's a lock to win the game. I just don't know that he's going to get over that hump.
Yeah, because nobody's looking at him as a threat.
Right. Even when he wins, they still say, yeah, oh, he's always nominated. He always loses. it's a strange thing.
Yeah, he's hanging in there. Let's go to our next person. By the way, Donnie was the Diplomat in BB16.
Yes, indeed. Everyone loved Donnie.
Everybody loves Donnie.
But not in the same way that everybody loves Meg. It's a different type of everybody loves. It's fine line. You got to have a little bit more going on in terms of strategy there. Plus, you know, last year with the Team America thing, that kind of threw things off. Next, we didn't actually have this one last year because we did it 1 week later. So there wasn't enough people to fill the roles, but Captain Loophole would be next.
Captain Loophole.
And the long and short of Captain Loophole is this is the super fan. This is the person who potentially maybe lacking in the social game because they're just a little awkward. But they know the game inside and out. They know perhaps, you know, horoscopes of people who competed in the first two seasons. They, you know, they just know everything there is to know about the game. It's just they might have a problem of translating that into success in the game because of their inability to connect on the social level. If you get someone who is able to overcome that, Ian Terry, then they can win because their knowledge is respected. And then if they can ingratiate themselves into alliances and stuff, that, I mean, it's almost, you know, a perfect storm of success there. The problem is that people who are super fans usually have a way of Max Dawson, Shireen kind of thing going on there, where it's like, oh God, they're talking about this. Stop it. How about this season, guys? So if they can get over that, then the longer they last, the more of a chance that they have of going even deeper in the game. It's kind of their odds of winning increase exponentially by the week.
Okay. So I feel like we got two super fans in the house in Steve and Jason.
Yes, we do. And so Captain Loophole would be the one who is a lot more socially awkward.
Okay. Well, that would definitely make it Steve.
There you go. I think the Captain Loophole thing, like they're so focused on knowing where all the, oh, well, they can't do this because they did that, you know, that's a week 7 thing. And like, yeah, you know all that, but can you do anything about it? And I think that's the big hurdle for Steve. I don't know that he's going to get there.
Yeah. For Steve, I like that clip that they kept showing where Austin and Liz are in the bed. And then he walks in and Liz is like, oh, it's Steve.
He's always here.
Yeah.
And Steve, I mean, you know, Steve's been getting the dodo edit in many ways. He's, you know, it's like, oh, I can't close the ironing board. Like, I don't know. We needed to see that. Really, that's the content you're going to show me? Isn't there anything going on the live feeds? There's got to be something. You know, they're focusing on the dodo thing and just how socially awkward it is. You know, and he's like, oh, I love you too. Oh, you didn't say I love you? Never mind.
Yeah, never mind. So Steve is in an interesting spot. I mean, number 4 overall at Captain Loophole. Do you think that he is set up particularly well for a Captain Loophole or not particularly well for a Captain Loophole?
I don't think he's set up particularly well because I think Captain Loophole, if you've made it to this point and have made the social inroads, I think you have a shot. I think you have a very strong shot because, like I said, you have the know-how of the game and then you get let in on the conversations, you get let in on the alliances, and it's not just, oh, we need a number, let's bring him in, and you know, we'll have another secret sub-alliance that doesn't include him, that's the exact same number of us, except minus Steve. You know, like I said, Ian Terry is a perfect example of someone who I think was just as awkward as Steve when he first started the game, but was able to, by this point of the season, really become part of alliances and, you know, even to the point where they're making, you know, allowing him to name alliances, and it's not being done in a kind of a condescending way. It's like, all right, name the alliance. Yeah, you're part of us. You know, I think that was the difference, and I just don't know that Steve's going to get there.
Yeah. That being said, he's hanging around. People aren't really gunning for him.
He knows the game. He knows he's supposed to throw the HOH. He just did it poorly, mm-hmm. And he wasn't even intentionally doing it poorly. He just honestly messed up, and he's aware to know that he's going to get called out on it. I mean, I think there's a lot of knowledge there. It's just, you know, it's more of a you know, he's a fan. You know, I can be the biggest fan in the world of a professional sport. I'm not going to be able to play the sport, and I don't know that he's able to put that together. But like you said, he's still there. If, you know, the part of the house, the After Dark Alliance, you know, can all get together and, you know, yeah, there's momentum that can be built there. It's just a question of, is he going to be able to pull the trigger and even lead?
To speak to that point about the being a fan versus playing in the game, Penner has a great line at the start of Survivor Fans versus Favorites. And he says, you know, it's one thing to be a fan of the Boston Red Sox. It's another thing to play against them.
Yeah, exactly. And sometimes you're so in over your head or so starstruck at the beginning of these things that you just like, you never recover. You know, you put people on a pedestal and, you know,
you never put the people on a pedestal.
No. And I think thank goodness there weren't returning players in the house for this season because, forget it, he would have been gone. I mean, that was the only thing that helped Ian out was that, yeah, he was, you know, I think starstruck at the beginning, but Boogie was willing to bring him along and you know, say, hey, snap out of it. Don't treat me like that. Just play the game. And I think had he had a different mentor, perhaps that might not have worked.
Yeah. Okay. Number three, AJ.
Number three is the X Factor. And the X Factor is pretty much the catch-all definition for any person in the house where you can say, hey, you know, one of these things is not like the other. And the person who is completely different from everybody else. So if it was 11 guys and one woman, obviously it's the woman. You know, if you're talking about a tribe of blue collar, white collar, you know, no collar, and you know, you're left with 13 people and 12 are white collar and one came from the no collar, all right, well, that's the different person. Unfortunately, this season, it's not one of these things is not like the other. It's one of these things is exactly like the other. I mean, the twin twist makes Lizulia the thing that's not like the other because it multiplies to two people if she lasts, you know, through five evictions. So the rules of the game have made her the X Factor, or them the X Factor, as the case may be.
Okay, so this is our Liz slash Julia.
Yeah, and, you know, if by all accounts, it doesn't, I mean, anything can happen, expect the unexpected, but doesn't seem like anyone's interested in kicking Liz out this next couple of weeks, which means, you know, they're both going to go in as their own. And, you know, having a twin sister in the house certainly makes you completely different than anyone else, other than perhaps your twin sister. But, you know, and I do also like the fact that they are different personalities. I mean, from a fan standpoint, at least they're not a carbon copy of each other. They seem to be capable of making different alliances, and yeah, I don't know that they'll turn on each other, but I do think that they'll argue a lot and won't necessarily vote as one mind.
Now, were you a fan of the original twin twist?
I thought it was okay. There was so much good stuff going on that season. I mean, I was really much more interested in Nokomis and Michael and how their relationship of not knowing that they were, I mean, that was a great twist. The DNA twist with this is your half sister. What? And to watch them try and piece that together, that to me was much more interesting than the twin twist. And I think it worked in that season because it was thematic with everything. I wasn't a fan of it per se. I mean, certainly the way it was revealed and they didn't figure it out. Great. You know, that was really cool. You know, this year they figured it out. At least they're using it. And so that makes it interesting to watch how they embraced it. And like, all right, we'll use her as a number and we'll bring her in and everything. But I mean, in terms of the promotional aspect of it, I mean, it's certainly just another in a long line of duds, don't you think?
Yeah, it's not really going anywhere, but I think it's been fun at least. Like, it's cool that they've actually discovered it and it's like no big deal.
Yeah, and you know, and it was cool to see how many people didn't discover it. You know, like the whole, you know, Audrey just finding out. Like, really? She's been so isolated she didn't find out. Like, I mean, and again, I'm watching the show. I'm sure live feeds, that could have been from 3 weeks ago. I don't know. But
no, I think it was from Thursday.
Yeah, okay. So, you know, but the fact that you know, it was being used as a bargaining chip when like, everyone thought they were so clever to have figured it out when, you know, if everybody figures it out, you're not clever for figuring it out. And I think Day picked up on it before anyone else. Unfortunately, she didn't leverage it properly. And I think she gets full marks for figuring it out. And it was fun to watch her figure it out. But once she figured it out, I didn't care anymore about the twist.
Yeah,
in that sense. And again, it was just the way they promoed this is like, oh, you know, if she let, you know, it wasn't if she's found out, it's if she lasts. So, okay, well, then it's not that big a deal.
You know, it is interesting because it's sort of like a tightrope act of, oh my God, this death-defying stunt. Liz and Julia will actually be switching all season long. What's going to happen? Will the house get... And then they're like, oh, we figured it out. And it's like, nobody cares. Like, oh, okay. But yeah, we're going to continue the trapeze act even though we see the wire and it can't fall or anything like that.
Yeah, and I wish it comes down to like, it's nothing to do with the show. I mean, the game engine is almost foolproof. I mean, and the proof of that is that CBS has tried to to screw with this so many different ways from Sunday, and the show's still strong in terms of, as far as I'm concerned, in terms of gameplay. But, you know, they make such a big deal out of, and there's a secret saboteur in the house. Oh, she's gone week one. Great.
Yeah.
Don't put all your eggs into the basket. And I think they even had an idea that she might get caught, and they thought, I'm sure they thought they'd get a much bigger reaction when she was caught and there'd be outrage, but you know, they figured, well, and we have a new twist every single week, so even if she gets caught, well, we got this, and then we'll get another takeover, and another takeover, and another takeover, and then I was like, oh, we don't even have any, no one wants to do it. I mean, you know, the last live show, when Julie's asking 15 questions for the last 15 minutes of the show, I'm like, really, it's the Julie Chen takeover?
Yeah.
You couldn't find anyone else? I mean,
the
really?
Talk.
Oh, yeah. Couldn't even get one of your co-hosts from the talk to help you out.
AJ, as a big sports fan, were you excited to see the Gronk take over?
I would have been excited if he was actually there. I mean, it was total fun. And the thing is, it was a totally phone in. And yet, I was actually flipping through the channels during the week, and he was on the talk. And he was doing more interesting stuff on the talk than he was doing on the BB Takeover, which is supposed to be the crazy show.
Mm-hmm.
But he's there. They gave him a minute to spike as many different objects as he could, and he spiked this big bowl of guacamole, and guacamole went all over Julie Chen's skirt. And I was like, well, that should have been on Big Brother. I would have watched that.
Yeah. Also, then people were telling me last night he was on the Celebrity Family Feud, but he was on in the time slot against Big Brother.
you know, it's just a disaster.
Bam!
Man, I really wish that they would let the game just play out. You want to put a theme on it, that's fine. You want to do something fun on opening night. Like, I like the two-night open because it kind of creates we're first-nighters, we're second-nighters. So it creates, an us versus them where it wouldn't necessarily happen if you just threw everyone in and said, go. It creates sides early. So I don't have a problem with the two-night load-in. But... you know, do something the first night to trigger things, whether it's, you know, Canada does it great. You know, whether it's, here's a phone call. Oh, you answer the phone. You're the HOH. Really? Nominate people now. What? Or, you know, the UK had the best opening night twist ever, in my opinion, where they put in the saboteur at week one. They said, he is what we call the people's puppet. He's going in. We're making him HOH. And he's just going to mess with the contestants for the first week. And then he's going to be evicted. We're going to rig it so he's evicted. We're just going to take him out of the house. He's only there for 1 week to cause trouble. And then they have to deal with the aftermath. And I think that's fine. He's not part of the game. It's not a contestant who wanted to play their whole life. No, they hired an actor to do it. And I think as long as to kickstart the season, fine. Theme, great. Once the
Is
game
that what
start,
Audrey was?
No. If she was, then they should have told us about it, right? That would have been great. But, you know... people are going to speculate in the house and be paranoid about everything anyway. So there's no need to do any twists. And all it does is annoy you because you could see that 3-4 weeks in, we got nothing left. All right, let's throw the Pandora's box in there again. Hey, Zingbot back.
Oh, Zingbot's going to get his own week.
Yeah, well, is it going to be the Zingbot takeover?
Yeah.
Or is he going to come in with, you know, is there like a robot movie coming out and he'll come in with the star of the robot movie?
Terminator? That's too late.
That's too late for that. But you know what I mean? Like, it's like trust that the show works and the people. And the other thing I want to say is I really think they have to stop the live show. Stop the live show. Record it an hour before air. Give yourself time to edit it properly so that Julie's not rushing, so she's not stumbling over half the names. Record it plausibly live. Give yourself time to edit out mistakes, fix anything. If you have no audio for 10 minutes, then you know what? You know what? Oh, we have time to fix it. Don't worry, everyone. Hey, audio's not working. Let's take that again. You know, it's not going... It's the only fear of doing, you know, oh, we can't do a live show. We can't not do it live because of spoilers. Well, people are watching the live feeds, you know. People are watching 2-3 days in a week where there are spoilers out there if you want to know. The people who don't want to know, don't know. It's not going to ruin anything to have the show, you know, have the eviction 1 hour before air because people who don't want to know aren't going to know. So, and people who do know and find out, guess what? They're still watching. You're not losing ratings as a result of it. So just get the show to where it looks good, to where there aren't mistakes that are fixable. That's just my opinion.
But do you think there's something to that? Like for years, people have said, what? SNL, forget live. They need to just tape everything. They can edit. They can make things tighter. Do you think that part of the appeal of the live show on Big Brother is like, oh my God, what's going to happen when Julie can't get programming in her ear, where something unexpected happens? Isn't that part of the appeal?
You know, but you still have that in a plausibly live that's done an hour before. I'm not saying you take out any of that stuff if it doesn't render the show unwatchable. No audio like that moment there made it unwatchable. I mean, you know, they're all jumping up and down. You don't hear them say, get ready for takeover. And they're running into the other room. And they're like, really? They missed in the puzzle HOH competition. They missed both times. They didn't have a camera on the lane of the person who won. It's like, that's stuff that you could, were they close? I'm just talking about a little bit of time to make sure that you cut to the camera at the right time. I mean, you know there was a camera on that lane. The director just didn't cut to it in time. And that ruins the viewing experience because I had, you know, all of a sudden, hey, we have a winner. Who? We didn't see it. Why? Oh, it was Becky. You know, like, yeah, okay, great. I know there wasn't a camera on Becky because she's the ninja and, you know, she's not going to do anything. But, you know, if you had a few seconds just to get that shot in there, I don't think it ruins the, oh my gosh, anything can happen live. I just think it makes the show watchable. You don't have to rush them. You don't have to rush them through a competition and saying, guys, come on, hurry. We're running out of time.
Well, you're such a perfectionist, AJ.
Look, do I really need to see 15 people walk up to a ball drop? All right, it is your turn. Walk. Next. Walk up to the cup, please. We could make that a little tighter and still make it seem live, and you're not losing anything. I mean, that was just dreary television. I'm sorry. It was. Make it a little, you know, snip, snip, snip. And then we don't have to fill, you know, for 15 minutes. You know, well, she's standing in a room watching, showing clips anyway. So that whole half hour doesn't need to be live. It's clips anyway.
Yeah, I do feel like we could stand to add some more action from the house to that Thursday show.
Yeah, that's all I'm saying. If you can package it so where the HOH competition isn't marred by, I mean, you know, how many years have they been doing this and they still can't get, please go back and reset it, please. Please go back and reset it.
Reset. Clay, you didn't reset.
That's all. I'm not saying get out of the spontaneity. I mean, the live vote is great in terms of, you don't have to tell the players that it's not live. I mean, it is live to them. They only get one shot. Don't redo anything there. I'm just talking about making it a more presentable package for us.
Okay. Number two.
I don't know, for all that, number two. All right, it will be the mad scientist. You know, someone who's always throwing ideas out there and wanting it to be done their way. I mean, that's the mad scientist is always planning ahead, always trying to look for conspiracies, always, you know, that dude over there is lying, that dude is there. They're a puppet master in many ways. They're the person who's kind of in control or wants to be in control because they're a bad mad scientist too. But they're the person who's kind of really trying to manipulate every single thing in the house that they can to their point of view. Always coming up with new schemes. All right, I'm on the block this week. I'm going to come up with this idea. If that doesn't work, I got a plan B. Don't worry. All right, well, we got a plan C. I'm going to tell him this. I'm going to tell her this. It's someone who's always thinking, always working. The game is always on for this person.
Okay.
And we don't have too many people left.
Yeah, well, I feel like this has to be Jason just by the process of elimination.
Yeah, it has to. It is, and I think Jason was. I think you'd feel a lot more comfortable and confident with this pick after like the first 2 weeks, and if Day had stayed in the house, because I think the two of them working together, you know, Jason was much more confident and in a position to be more of a successful mad scientist. Last season, it was our winner, Derek, who was always had the move. He knew where all the pieces were on the chessboard, and he was always ready. All right, that didn't go as planned, but I'm not going to panic. I'm going to do this. And I think just from what little I've seen of Jason, I mean, there's a lot of focus on other people with the Battle of the Block and everything, but he's always seems to be planning ahead. He's able to look people in the eye and say, he is lying. I know because I've been watching him for like 3 weeks now. Even when he was with Day, it's like, have you seen this? Yeah. Oh, yeah, I see it too. Yeah. He's always thinking about the game. He's always thinking about what the next move is. he's just not, he hasn't been successful. Like I said, just because this puts him in a position where he could have had a lot more chance of winning, I think, circumstance, he just hasn't been very good at it.
Yeah, he's had some tough breaks throughout this first few weeks of the show. I think he's probably helped by Davon not being there anymore. And he certainly did a good job last night on the Sunday night show. He certainly did a good job on the Sunday night show this week, where he was able to point some fingers at Audrey and get out of really being Shelley's number one target to a degree.
Yeah, like I said, it's there.
Yeah.
It's not working. And I think that's where, if anyone's going to criticize me and tell me that I'm crazy and I'm wrong, it's just because it hasn't been working. This isn't about success. You can be a bad mad scientist. I just think circumstance hasn't worked out for him. But I think he's certainly, he's not the type of person, you know, he can go out at any time. I'm not saying he's a lock to make to the final three, but he's the best equipped to suddenly summon the forces together. And you know, he has a I'm confident that he has a plan. He may not be successful in enacting it. I think that's where the issue is.
Yeah. So Jason is the mad scientist. Last season, we said Derek was the mad scientist. That one seems like a slam dunk.
Yeah, and everything went his way, and you know, there wasn't a lot of competition for there wasn't a lot of competition last season, in my opinion. I think it was Derek's from like round week three.
Yeah. Well, I took him number one with the number one pick in the draft. So
and
yeah.
At that point I just went, all right, congratulations, you've won.
That was
in
like the
mind.
Andrew Luck of the BB16 draft.
Yeah. I mean, sometimes you just know, and that was a perfect example. I don't think we know this season who's gonna win. I don't think there's anyone with that kind of a runaway success.
Okay. Number one,
which is also 1 and 7, because now we're back with the marriage of convenience. At number one is the power broker of the marriage of convenience. And the reason that is that the marriage of convenience, the alpha, is number one is because a lot of times there, you know, two votes, there's a way to survive, because at some point, you know, you can either turn on the partner, or, you know, you're working together, you can turn on a third person. You know, there's someone else that you can throw the blame on, and they can be voted out before you as the numbers start to dwindle. So, you know, when you have a marriage and two people playing as one in a partnership, the further they get in the game, the more likely it is for one of them to get all the way to the end. Just, you know, the law of averages at that point, the probability is going to be greater for this person. And if you're the one calling the shots, if you're the one who is more likely to be in control, then you're more likely to win. So the marriage of convenience, obviously, with the only two people left are Vanessa and Austin.
Yes.
You know, they're not a show. A lot of times it's a showmance. In this case, it's not a showmance. But clearly, from very early on, they kind of happenstance put them together as a group. It was more along the lines of Vanessa saying, oh, I got to pick someone to give the free express pass to. I'll pick Austin. I mean, that's really, in terms of watching on the TV show, that's kind of how the relationship started. And it's still there. So it's clearly been long enough where they're working together. They become co-HOHs at one point. And, you know, Austin kind of deferred. And, you know, he spun it that it was I wanted to defer. But really, I didn't see it that way. I think that's revisionist history on his part in the diary room. I think Vanessa's the stronger player of the two. I think she's a smarter player of the two. I think she reads people a lot better than he does. I think he's got he's shown himself to have a lot more of a willingness to talk to other people and say what he shouldn't be saying. I think we saw a little bit of that last night. And yeah, I know it was packaged in a way that perhaps that's not exactly how it went down, and I don't necessarily think that Austin was wrong in talking to Jackie last night, but they were certainly at least on the show spinning it like, uh-oh, he's in trouble now. Yeah, I don't think he's in that much trouble off of that, but it does show that, you know, he's the lesser of the two in my mind, and I think Vanessa is a little bit more positioned in terms of relationships with other people to last longer.
Yeah, I think that makes a lot of sense, where you have a marriage of convenience that is actually people who are working together. It's not always a showmance, and actually it's typically not a showmance,
right?
These marriage of conveniences. And so I think that's actually a very strong marriage of convenience.
Yeah, like I said, and I considered very much, you know, the Clay and Shelley, putting them in this role, you know, and Austin could be the narcissist, but, you know, it could have worked that way. Just didn't quite fit as well as this combination, I think.
Yeah. Yeah, you could do it either way. You could do it either way. I think that it solves some problems, but it creates some others to do it where you have Clay and Shelley as the marriage of convenience. I think Clay is the more dominant partner in the marriage of convenience, and Shelley is the person that's more riding shotgun. And then that does change some things up. But again, it's still tricky.
Yeah, and like I said, just because you're number one in the marriage convenience, that by no means ensures that you're going to win. It doesn't even mean you're a favorite to win. It just means that you are in a better position. This is all about who is in a better position. This role, you know, obviously, if you're two people working together, you get a better chance at one of you making it to the end than if you're working alone. It's a numbers thing. It just is. And usually the marriage convenience is part of a larger alliance, which means that, you know, all right, so the five of us are going to go further, but the two of us are never going to turn on each other. I mean, in fact, I think that's the perfect Big Brother strategy, to go into the house, find one person that you're going to, you know, as early as possible, find that one person who's going to be your person. All right, the two of us, we're always going to vote together. Obviously, you know, if you're betrayed, you're betrayed, but you go and you find that person. And then you find a third person to hook on, and you say to that person, we'll all vote together. But really, their vote is meaningless, because you two are always going to control that. The two of you will always control that third vote, because if it's majority rules. So that person, then you bring in two more people, a couple that you can manipulate. But your three votes, the original three, are always going to dominate the two.
Oh, this is like a pyramid scheme.
It's a cabal. It's called the cabal. And I'm telling you, it's unbeatable if you keep it secret and the two of you are in perfect trust. It's unbeatable.
AJ's affiliate marketing alliance.
It's unbeatable if you keep it a secret. The problem is Shield in Canada. Shield, you can't be obvious about it.
I'm trying to finagle this this list to, if I could try to do it with Clay and Shelley as the marriage of convenience. All right, let me run this past you. Tell me what you think about this, if I gave you this list. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Fresh meat, Jackie. Ninja, mm-hmm. Becky. Cheerleader, Meg. Okay, so that's all the same.
Yep.
Then I put Austin as narcissist. Okay. Old Reliable, let's keep it James. Idiot Savant, I'm going to put that as Steve. Then the marriage of convenience, I'm going to make that Clay and Shelley, with Clay being the number one.
Right.
Okay. Loose Cannon, let's keep that Audrey. Diplomat, keep that Johnny Mac. Captain Loophole, I'll make that Jason.
Okay.
He's the guy, he knows, he's the super fan, he knows a lot of the stuff, mm-hmm. He knows twins and all this other stuff. X-Factor, keep that Liz. And then make the mad scientist Vanessa.
It's not bad, and it is a version, a similar version that I considered. The only problem I have with that one, that I like, the reason I like mine that I presented a little bit better, is just because Steve, as the idiot savant, the decisions, he's not making any decisions, and he's not really doing anything to captain his own ship. And I think the idiot savant does make decisions and have some moves that they can fall back on. Steve really has been under the radar. Plus, Captain Loophole is generally someone who was lacking in the social game at the start of the season. And Jason is not lacking in social game.
Yeah.
He's got a lot of faults. That ain't one of them.
That's good. Yeah, tough to do.
But again, like I said, I mean, I'm not going to say you're wrong either, because this is opinion and
subjective.
It's totally subjective. I like the way these pieces fit together. Sometimes there's square pegs and round holes. I mean, I had Amber's the marriage convenience last year, and
with Cody.
Yeah, and at the time we recorded, that was the only one that fit, because there wasn't much going on.
Yeah.
because Derek had everyone on lockdown.
Yeah, that was really the height of the beast mode. Cowboy is stalking Amber and Cody is coming to her defense.
Right. And, you know, and she was spending a lot of time with him kind of as, please save me. This is not a perfect science.
It's hard to do. You don't get enough credit for the time that you put into this.
No, you don't. No, really, I didn't say that. I didn't say that. You said that, Rob.
I'm saying that.
You're saying that. I never said that, Rob.
No
I heard
house
you
meeting
say
necessary.
Okay.
Okay.
Just making sure that you don't tell me I can't come on the podcast anymore.
No, okay. I won't say that.
Well, there you have it.
Good job. Let's just one more time. Here's AJ's list. Okay. We have fresh meat is Jackie. The ninja is Becky.
Yep.
We have the cheerleader is Meg. We have the narcissist is Clay. We have old reliable is James. The idiot savant is Shelley. Part two of the marriage of convenience is Austin. The loose cannon is Audrey. The diplomat is Johnny Mac. Captain Loophole is Steve. The X Factor is Liz and Julia. The mad scientist is Jason. And part one of the marriage of convenience is Vanessa. There you go. Your Big Brother 17 archetypes. Okay, how about that?
I'm down. It's my idea, so yeah.
All right. Of course, we are going to jump into our draft. Let me just take a moment and thank our sponsor for this episode of the podcast, AJ, and those are friends over at True Car, because you won't need to be Captain Loophole to be able to get the best deal when you're buying a new car, because True Car allows you to shop for a new car without even leaving your house, because you can do it on the True Car website and the True Car mobile app, AJ.
Wow.
Yes.
Impressive.
Yes. Configure the car the way that you want and see what other people are paying for the same car. You can make sure it's going to be an old reliable and you won't have to deal with any loose cannons down at the dealership trying to haggle for a price. See what other people are paying for the car that you're looking for down to the zip code, so you'll know exactly what you want to pay for the car you want. And then once you decide on the car, you could lock in those guaranteed savings on average over $3,000 of MSRP, and you'll be connected with a trusted True Car certified dealer that will honor your savings without a negotiation and won't treat you like fresh meat. So when you're ready for a new transparent car buying experience, save time, save money, never overpay, download the True Car app today. All right, AJ, let's get into our draft. Now, you have the number one pick. It's a snake draft.
Yes.
Just to go through last year's Big Brother draft, at the very least. It was close. Really came down to the wire. I took Derek with the number one pick, and that ultimately saved the day. It came down to it. Yeah, 65-46. Here's our scoring rules. Let's see, do we need to have any updates on the scoring rules? So 1 point per week for advancing the game.
Right.
2 points for being the last standing HOH.
Right, 1 point for winning the things, yeah.
Yeah, 1 point for winning the veto. 2 points per jury vote.
That sounds about right.
So Derek was ultimately the most valuable player in the draft with 27 points for Derek. The next most valuable player in the draft was Cody with 18 points. And the third most valuable player in the draft was a tie between Frankie Grande and Beast Mode Cowboy. So I feel like our scoring system is working pretty well.
Yeah, I think so. I think it's fine. I mean, you know, we're not going to give any points for being part of a takeover. I think we've got it down a lot better than other shows, perhaps.
Yeah, it's an interesting draft this season because there is no consensus number one, I don't believe. So the game is probably more wide open this year than it was a year ago. So AJ, kick off our festivities with the number one pick.
My only question before we get going is, are we capping this at 6 each? Or are we going to go 7 each under the assumption that Julia is in fair play?
Oh, okay. I like that. I like that.
Okay. All right. So my first pick, I'm going to, she was my preseason favorite, and, you know, I have her as the marriage of convenience number one. I mean, why change what I was picked going in? I'll go with Vanessa.
Vanessa is the number one pick for AJ Mass. Why are you feeling so good about Vanessa?
I just think that there's you know, she's in the majority at the moment, and I think that she has that kind of plausible deniability and being able to throw Austin under the bus if she needs to. And I think she's positioned okay. I mean, like, no one's positioned great, but I think she, there are bigger targets out there at the moment. And like I said, I picked her preseason, so I just want to maintain that.
Okay. This is tough. This is very tricky for me. I'm going to go with the number two pick. I'm going to take Clay.
Okay.
I think he's set up well. I don't think anybody is gunning for him. Take him with the number two pick. And I am going to take, I'll take Johnny Mack with the number three pick.
Mm-hmm. Certainly a fun pick.
Fun pick.
Yeah. Curses.
I didn't think he was going to get back to me.
He wouldn't have, no. Absolutely not. All right. So I will then go with...
4 and 5. Two picks in a row for eight.
I don't want to load my boat there. You know what? I will go with both twins.
Oh, wait, both? I feel like you only get one if we're going to draft 14.
No, I have two picks.
Oh, okay. Oh, you're taking Liz and Julia.
Yes.
Wow.
Well, am I going to have a preference between one or the other right now? No, I don't really know yet. I'm going to take both of them and hope that one of them ends up going far.
See, I have Liz higher up on my board than Julia.
You know what? I think Julia can be a little bit more snaky. Which one's Thickums again?
I think, well, you have both of them. You don't have to worry.
Okay, there you go. All right.
I believe Liz technically is Thickums.
Oh, okay. There you go.
I think so. All right. But it doesn't matter. You don't have to worry because you have both of them.
Yeah.
You have both of them, Liz and Julia. Now, what if, based on, like, what if hypothetically Liz gets voted? Are you just flat out, that's, you went all in there and then you lose both of them in 1 week?
Well, I think technically, because they're both in the house, I think I do get a point for each of them if they both survive this week. And
so that sort of offsets the gamble of that.
Right.
If they could go out next week and then they're both gone.
Right, exactly.
Okay, so that's what you get for going with Liz and Julia. All right, so now looking at my board, Liz and Julia are gone. I've got two picks here. Give me Jason.
Okay.
Then after Jason, give me, this is tough. I'm going to say, give me Meg.
Okay.
Give Jason and Meg back to back. I think Meg isn't going anywhere for a while.
Yeah, no, it's one of those things. Even though she's ranked low, again, that's chances of winning, not necessarily chances of lasting.
Okay.
Yeah. The way this house is going is insane. I'm going to go... All right, you know, I think I just got to load up on people who are in the majority here. I'm going to load up on Shelly and Austin.
Shelly and Austin. Not bad picks.
Yeah.
Shelly and Austin. So here's my pick. So here's who's still left on the board. We got Jackie.
Mm-hmm.
We got Becky.
Yep.
We got James.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's Steve. We got Audrey. I feel like Steve's fallen far. Let me take Steve at number 10.
And I get value one pick for the spot. Yes.
Yes. And then I got one more. And it's really coming down to who's going to be last. And then I'm going to get number 14 also here. So for me, it's like between Jackie and Becky. Who's going to hang on the longest? Give me Becky. Becky update. Okay. Who's coming for Becky? Good.
Yeah, exactly. All right, so that leaves me with the choice between Jackie, James, and Audrey.
Mm-hmm.
And whoever I don't pick goes to you, huh?
Yeah.
Well, yeah. You know what? I guess you've got Audrey then.
Okay, Jackie. And James.
I hope Jackie, does one of those Victoria rides into into the final three.
Yeah, and that was my thought with Becky.
Yeah, well, one of the two of them, I think, is going definitely final four, just based on law of hey, we need a floater.
Okay.
All right.
Very good. Good draft.
Not too bad.
Good draft.
Not too bad. Yeah, I think so. I think we got a nice even. Well, who knows? But it looks even to me.
Okay. So let's go ahead and just recap the draft. So first pick overall was Vanessa. Great pick. Great spot at number one. Number two, Rob went with Clay. Then Johnny Mack. So then Liz and Julia went back to back to AJ at 4 and 5. Then Rob took Jason and Meg. If the Sixth Sense stays in power, that could be a dangerous pick for Rob right there.
Absolutely. Since I have Shelley and Austin as my next two picks.
Yeah. Shelley and Austin are still with AJ. Then Rob took Steve. Rob ends up with Becky. And then Jackie and James end up back with AJ, and Rob has Audrey. See, really, AJ has sort of cornered most of the market on the Sixth Sense. Rob has most of the rest of the house.
Well, you know, it's fine until, you know, next week's Big Brother takeover is a somehow some sort of roulette wheel that lands on 7 and you get 7 extra votes, and then suddenly the Sixth Sense is no more. Manipulation might end up costing me here.
So we'll see. We will see. All right. AJ, great job once again.
Oh, it's always a good time. I enjoy it immensely, and this is just a lot of fun to do.
Yeah. All right. So let's go ahead and just set up. So fantasy baseball is happening. Trade deadline is coming up. What should people be doing to be keeping up with everything that's going on?
Yeah, just, you know, follow ESPN.com/fantasy. We got a lot of stuff now on daily fantasy sports for people who are playing with DraftKings or things like that, which you can play on a daily basis. Certainly, I write a column most of the week on figuring out which pitchers you should pick for those games, and updated lineups as they come in. So you can always make those last minute lineup decisions in those contests. But yeah, the trade deadline is also coming up. We'll have any updates on that going on. You can follow me on Twitter at AJ Mass. I'm always available to discuss not only reality television, but also fantasy baseball. That's also a place you can do it. And also, if you haven't bought my book yet, I've got two books out there. I've got one book about my life as Mr. Met called Yes, It's Hot in Here. And of course, the book in which I discuss the 12 personalities and other things is How Fantasy Sports Explains the World. So you got that going for you as well. Okay. Also, on post-show recaps, I'll be updating the last two episodes of Wayward Pines. Will be coming up this week.
How is the Wayward Pines?
Started off really strong and got up in the middle and slow decline since. But I'll be discussing the last two episodes, episodes 8 and 9 of the 10-episode run with the Tabulator, Kirk Clark, and Mr. Recently Married Mike Bloom.
Yes.
Coming up this week. We'll be discussing that in advance of the finale, which is coming up on Thursday.
So if you want to check out AJ's books, we will post a link to them on Amazon.com in the description for this page up at robhasawebsite.com. And AJ is really good on Twitter. If you have any thoughts on this podcast, AJ is very responsive to people that will tweet him.
Yeah. Look, you know, if you have a difference of opinion, you know, feel free to let me know. Just let me know kindly.
Yes.
Be gentle. No need to argue.
AJ, do you have a hashtag for this discussion today?
I do. I have a hashtag is Jackie's hashtag Jackie's eyeball.
Jackie's eyeball. Great hashtag. I feel like we need a screenshot also.
Jackie's
eyeball. Okay.
Good times.
Yeah. Great job, AJ.
Thanks a lot, Rob. My pleasure.
Yes. Very fun. And then, can you believe it? I can't wait until we talk about the archetypes for Survivor 31. I can't wait to what is Stephen Fishback going to be? Fresh meat?
And fresh meat's going to be really hard to come up with when it's all returners. So that's going to be interesting.
I can't wait.
I cannot wait. You know what? It was. I got to say, it's a little bit different now because now, you know, I've met a lot of these people. I went to your big live know-it-all show in New York, and I got to meet a lot of former players who have gone back. And I got to say, my good friend Spencer Bledsoe must have been home like 2 hours before he texted me to say, "Hey, I'm back." I know nothing about what he did, but just he was very excited to let everyone know he was back. So maybe that's a sign.
I don't know. So... Pencil it in right now. Keith Nail, Old Reliable.
It's probably
put it in ink.
If he lasts to 13, and that's the question, isn't
that's,
it?
That's
if
the question.
If he's not there when we do it, then maybe not. It'll be interesting. It'll be interesting to see. I don't know. It'll be interesting to see how many people like are different from the last time and play just such a different game that they may surprise us.
Yeah. Oh man, can't wait till Abby Maria is the diplomat. That'll be everybody's
what's
playing
her
different
story?
Now. Yeah. All right, AJ, great job. Thank you so much, and we'll talk to you again soon.
All right, take care, Rob.
All right, everybody, there you have it. That's AJ Mass back here on Rob Has a Podcast. So much Big Brother content coming this week. On Monday, I did our Big Brother voicemail show with Matt Carter from CarterMatt.com. But instead of taking only voicemail, we actually spent the first 30, 35 minutes talking about a very dramatic Monday in the Big Brother house, which is really going to set the stage for what should be some very exciting episodes Wednesday and Thursday. And I'm very excited for this upcoming Wednesday night when Zach Rantz is our guest live at 9:15 p.m. Eastern Time, 6:15 p.m. Pacific. Looking forward to hearing what you guys have to say in the comments here on robswebsite.com. I'm also very excited because our big evolution of strategy Chapter 20, Heroes versus Villains, is going to drop this Friday, closing out Volume 2 of the Evolution Strategy. Very excited for you guys to hear that. It's over 17 hours long, and it's coming up, and I got a lot of work to do to get it ready for you guys to hear. So, with that being said, I'm going to get out of here. Have a good one, guys. Talk to you soon. Bye.